Chapter 4, text number 1. Udhava uvacha atate tat anugyata mukha pit vacha varunim chaya vibram shitam chita jnana duruk tire marma hush pash pritchu o deva vacha akate tad anu gyata mukva pit vacha varunim kaya vibram shita jnana Gurukhtar Marma Pash Prisho. Gurukhtar Marma Pash Prisho. Buddha Bhagavacha. Tatitan Anugyatan. Bhukta Pitvajan. Ladies. Anugyataha, being permitted, bhuktva, after partaking, pitva, drinking, cha, and varunim, liquor, taya, by that, vibramshita jnana, being bereft of knowledge, duruk. Hai, with harsh words, marma, the core of the heart, pashprishu, touched. Translation, thereafter, all of them, the descendants of Rishni and Bhoja, being permitted by the Brahmanas, partook of the remnants of prasad, and also drank liquor made of rice. By drinking, they all became delirious. And bereft of knowledge, they touched the core of each other's hearts with harsh words. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the ceremonies, when Brahmanas and Vaishnavas are sumptuously fed, the host partakes of the remnants of the food after the guest has given permission. So, the descendants of Rishni and Bhoja formally took permission from the Brahmanas and ate the prepared food stuff. Kshatriyas are permitted to drink at certain occasions, so they all drank a kind of light liquor made of rice. By such drinking, they became delirious and bereft of sense so much, so that they forgot their relationship with one another and used harsh words which touched the core of each other's hearts. Drinking is so harmful that even such a highly cultured family becomes affected by intoxication and can forget themselves in a drunken state. The descendants of Rishni and Bhoja were not expected to forget themselves in this way, but by the will of the Supreme it happened. And thus, they became harsh towards one another. jnana timurandasya pinamjana sarakaya chakshun viritam yena tasma shri gurave namaha. Is Pushkar here?
Yes.
Huh?
He'll be here.
He'll be here shortly, okay. Pushkar shared something that, you know, he speaks really swiftly. It's hard to capture everything. But what I recall is there was a conversation with Srila Prabhupada in Calcutta. There were a bunch of ants crawling around the floor that were eager to get some petals of the flowers because, you know, Prabhupada said that the wall, in the crack of your room, there's thousands of ants. He said that from experience. So, according to Prabhupada, there's a lot of ants zooming around after the flowers that were on the floor, flower petals. And then Prabhupada went into a little saying, they're after the... They get intoxicated from the sugar that's in the flower petals. And then Prabhupada went on to say how there are three ways of making alcohol. Sugar is one of them. Grain is another one of them. And certain herbs is another one of them. And if I understood him correctly, Pushkar said that Prabhupada said that his father had some kind of business where he gathered some certain kinds of those items that people would use to make liquor. I couldn't exactly, maybe I'll ask him to repeat it when he comes and speak slowly because he sometimes speaks very fast. And so Prabhupada was just elaborating on ways in which one can make liquor, that, you know, and that his father was engaged in, apparently at least part of what he did as his livelihood was something that could be, not that there's only one use of it, but it could be used for making liquor. So back to the purport. I've heard Prabhupada in class describe it's really easy to make liquor. Rice wine, he called it. So fermenting and sits for some days and then take the water off the top of the fermented rice and distill it and it becomes rice wine. So people in villages, they didn't need to go to wine shops because they know how to do it. Without going to a wine shop. They just, and rice is abundantly available east in Bengal. And so people would do that. So it was something that was known, but, you know, a kind of caveat to all of this is high class persons wouldn't do that, or low class persons only would do that. But now here he's indicating that there are some occasions when Kshatriyas were permitted to do that. Permitted means, you know, within the codes of the Vedas. And I found it very surprising, I don't know if any of the rest of you, but that the Brahmanas gave permission. Like, not that the Brahmanas did also, but they gave permission to the Kshatriyas. And it, in one sense, it's sensible, that is to say, within the codes of the Vedas, in certain occasions, in certain circumstances, then they just gave the nod because it's within the Vedas. So in that sense, they gave the permission because it's within the Vedas, in a certain festival. This was a big festival at a holy place, and the Brahmanas were nicely fed, and they took the remnants with their permission, and then with their permission, the rice wine. So the emphasis is two things, this short purport. The emphasis is, this is a warning. three things. Even a person who is very elevated, with even a modest amount of intoxication, can become in a difficult situation. So there's this, you know, a little bit is okay kind of rationale, when something, there's regular principles, and a little bit is okay, or in moderation is what some people say, little moderation is okay. So this is one of those situations where these Prabhupada is indicating very elevated persons in moderation, and he's using the phrase light liquor, wasn't, you know, the other kind, the heavy is light, but even in moderation it can bring havoc. So don't bring havoc, and beware. Even if there's some, if you're a Kshatriya and there's some injunction and Brahmana say okay, beware. There's consequences. In this case, it's a severe consequence. Then the second point is that all of this happened, including their drinking, including their becoming delirious, including their harsh speech, was sanctioned by the Supreme Lord, because it's part of a bigger picture of going back in time where the Brahmanas gave a curse and the whole thing. It's part of a lila to teach lessons, X, Y, Z, various lessons about proper conduct. But it's the bigger picture is it's a lila of the Supreme Lord to bring back to their demigod posts the expansions of those demigods that were assisting him in his service. Even, according to previous purport, they had become siddhas, sadhana siddhas. That was part of a bigger lila. And warning, don't insert ourselves into the position of saying, well, such and such was a lila. My thoughts are going to an incident that happened during the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'm sure most of you learned Vaishnavas know. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur was posted in Puri as the chief magistrate, one of the fearless services he had to do was to deal with Bhishikasen. Bhishikasen. Bhishikasen was a mystic sadhu who lived on the outskirts of Puri, and he was claiming that he was an avatar of Vishnu, and his two assistants were expansions or Balaram and something or something. So he was a mystic, and people were attracted to mysticism. They went to visit him. So one of the things that was reported back in Puri was some ladies went, and he, Bhishikasen, engaged with them in rasa dance and polluted them. And they came back, and somehow the mishap came to the authorities, and the authorities wanted this to be addressed. You know, the wealthy people whose wives were polluted, they wanted something to be done about Bhishikasen. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur requested the police to go arrest him and bring him to court. They were afraid because he's a powerful guy, so they didn't want to go. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur fearlessly went, they accompanied him. And some exchange when he reached there. And he asked some questions of Bhishikasen, who gave some, you know, puzzling kinds of responses, indirect answers to his questions. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, come with me, I want to have a trial for this charge against you. And Bhishikasen wagged his head back and forth because He had a power of making fire come out of his hair. So fire came out of his hair. And the police backed off. Whoa, fire coming out of his hair. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur fearlessly grabbed him by the arm. Come with me. And then Bhishikasen said something like, very well, I'll come, this is my leela. Very well, I'll come. So that's my mind went to. It's my leela. It's my leela to fill in the blank. So we don't do like that because we're not on such a platform. It's not our leela. It's not Krishna's will to do mischief and call it leela. There's more to the story. I'll just tell the rest, because it's not a long purport, I'll tell the rest of the story. He came, put in jail, he fasted, he cursed Bhaktivinoda Thakur that his family members would die while waiting for the trial to happen. his daughter came down with a very, very severe fever. Bhagavati, his wife, begged him, please release this. Our daughter may die. He cursed our daughter and she's got a big fever, and he moved on. He didn't relent. She overcame her fever. He was fasting in jail for a number of days because, you know, not like a martyrdom. It was a purpose of increasing shakti or strength, so he would have strength. Bhaktivinoda Thakur came down with fever. He went ahead with the trial anyways, and he was found guilty. And as he was writing, according to the biography, as he was writing the decision for the court, his hand was shaking with fever, but he went ahead anyways, you know, powerful, fearless Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the sentence was announced, so many days in jail or whatever it was. And as they were taking him out of the courtroom, wisely, someone of the persons that was assigned to that had a big pair of scissors and cut all his hair. Because it said that yogis store their power in their hair. And he fell to the ground. And within a short number of days, he died. And the Bhishikasen. And you know, so the glory goes to Bhaktivinoda Thakur for being fearless and relentless in fulfilling his duties at the risk of his own family, the risk of his own life, but he was protected. And there's other nice stories of how he was protected, but I won't do that right now. So devotees, so I went off on that tangent. Devotees don't use the explanation that I did something that I shouldn't have done because it was my leela, or Krishna willed me to do it, or Krishna doesn't will us to do something that's inappropriate, like drinking or etc. etc. Krishna doesn't will us to do that. Are there examples? The answer is yes. Are there examples where exalted Vaishnavas do something that's out of the ordinary and even contrary to their character and contrary to injunctions of scripture and so forth? And the answer is yes. But these are persons where it's under the direction of the internal potency of the Lord. So it's being repeated several times in the course of these purports, so that we can be clear, things that are untoward are happening because it's Krishna's plan for it to happen. You know, matakmatir gyanam apohanam cha. From within the heart of living entity, the Supreme Lord Krishna, Hridyan, he gives knowledge, remembers, and forgetfulness, and he gives indication of what to say and what to do. So the main thing that one requires is to become a pure devotee. Small thing, become a pure devotee. And then Krishna will take care of everything. Krishna will take care of everything. Just this morning I was listening to Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles speaking with a professor, and he was kind of giving like a panorama of the Hare Krishna movement and what it is. And in the course of that description, a very nice explanation Prabhupada was giving about vegetarian. We're vegetarian, but not, we don't promote vegetarianism. Then he, that was interesting, he said, vegetarian, non-vegetarian, everyone is open for a relationship with God. And then he said, when one takes the position of being a devotee of God, then it's vegetarian. Because you don't, we eat only what's offered to Krishna, and only those things are offerable to Krishna, so one automatically becomes vegetarian. We don't promote vegetarianism. We promote God consciousness. That's our this is what he was saying to this professor. Because when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, then you're part and parcel of Krishna, and all of the living entities, they have different dress. They're also part and parcel of Krishna, so they're to be respected equally with you, because differently, yes, of course, but respected, and therefore there's no question of cutting their throat. So devotee becomes a vegetarian. We don't promote vegetarianism. We promote becoming a devotee. So that's the Sarvadharmam Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja verse explained in practical language. Now, one other thing that's in the verse and purport was harsh words. Duruk Thai. Now, they spoke harsh words bereft of knowledge. Vibramshita Gyana. So, Vibrama, it's one of the defects of the conditioned soul. Brahma and Vibrama, that one becomes very bewildered. Bewildered by intoxication in their case, but people that are not alcohol intoxicated, but just material energy intoxicated, they're bewildered, and they don't know what's what. And when they don't know what's what, when someone doesn't loses sense of what's what, you know, what's proper, what's to be done, what's not to be done, that this principle of speech can be beneficial or detrimental. And harsh speech, duruktai, can be more hurtful than a sword or other ways of inflicting pain on the body. If the heart, marma is the word used here. Marma is a word I learned first from Ayurveda. It's an important word in Ayurveda, of course. The heart is the central organ in the body, but the heart is the central place of the repository of exercising our free will. We had a conversation the other day about desire or free will, because that's intrinsic to the living entity, just as we're part and parcel of Krishna. Krishna has unlimited free will, we have tiny free will. And how is that free will directed? It's something we can choose because it's free will. And therefore, for example, proper speech. Celebrated verse, very important verse, 17:15 Bhagavad Gita, is austerity of speech, because with speech is not controlled. Austerity doesn't just mean like severe, it means with volition. One can use this way, or one can use that way, or not use it at all. I'll just elaborate on that a little bit, not use it at all. Before coming to Alachua, I was in Houston, and over the whole, while you were having your festival of inspiration over here, I was having a festival of inspiration over there. But it was a different kind of festival. It was discussing Light of the Bhagavat in one section of the Bhagavat. Several sections of Light of the Bhagavat, Prabhupada is expressing the role of sadhu to elevate society. And one of the characteristics is the sadhu will sometimes speak, sometimes not speak. Means they have control. They have austerity of speech. They know when to say as well as what to say or to not say. So sometimes a sadhu is silent. But not when you're giving a Bhagavatam class. But sometimes a sadhu is silent. And maybe it's appropriate. Someone might say, why are you being silent? Or why don't you say something, do something? Sometimes it's appropriate to be silent. Here's a lesson that I learned from Bhujan Prabhu on the matter of there's times to be silent. I spent some time in the early years when the BIHE was getting started and Bhujan was living in the Gurukul building, then the Gurukul building, now it's somewhere else. And every day we had lunch together, which was really nice. And they had their conversations on different things. So one day it had come to my attention, somebody had done something and there was some hue and cry about that something. And I was discussing, what do you think should be done to help that somebody who did something unwise and now there's a hue and cry? And he gave words of wisdom, like he often would do, and said, sometimes there are situations where we just leave it up to Krishna. I mean, he didn't say, that's what I should do or we should do or something, but it's true. It's the role of a sage or a sadhu that sometimes they say, sometimes they don't say. And his explanation was, some things are just between that person and Krishna, and Krishna will work it out. Don't take Krishna's position and try to work it out. And, you know, then it takes some finer intelligence. Okay, then where's the line between I should do something or I should just allow Krishna to do something? You know, that's a finer discernment power that intelligent people have that that most of the rest of us don't have because we're not so intelligent. But, you know, some indication from Super Soul. So I just took it in that particular case. Bhujan has a Krishna channel. And he was, you know, suggesting in this case, it's best to not play Krishna's role, just let Krishna correct and adjust things according to Krishna's own way of doing things. Don't get in the middle and muck up with what Krishna's intention is. Now, how do you know? It takes having, you know, the password for the Krishna channel. It takes a lot of Krishna consciousness, and sometimes we don't know. Is it best to do something, not to do something? At least in some cases, you know, control your speech and pause until it becomes a little more clear. You know, there's the Western saying, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. You've heard that one? You've heard that one? You've heard that one? That's an American thing, maybe. You've not heard that one. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Means sometimes just, you know, hold your tongue. Or your behavior is just pause. Because that's what's appropriate, is to pause and not to rush in and, you know, be Krishna's instrument when you're not really being Krishna's instrument. And the flip side is, when there's a lack of control, something happens. And one of the somethings that commonly happens is the lower modes of nature and speech that's without sensitivity to the other person. Now, it takes a cultured individual to know what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. One of the rules given in chapter 17, text 15 is, if you have a relationship of like a teacher or a parent or a clearly established, here's the authority, here's the other. In sadhu ninda, which is a topic that I've taken some interest in understanding more deeply, when a spiritual master or a spiritual authority speaks strongly, that's not sadhu ninda. It's assuming the relationship is what it is, and the well-wishing spiritual master wants to correct someone, then it's okay. It's not sadhu ninda. It's correction, like a parent may correct a child. And it shouldn't be done harshly, but sometimes strongly is necessary. Sometimes. And sometimes not. And it takes discretion, it takes culture, and it takes affection to know when and when not. But it's not in the category of sadhu ninda. But here, they spoke harshly. And it's strange because they're very cultured persons. As the previous purport explained, they're sadhana siddhas. They're not just fellows. They're not just bhaktas, they're sadhakas, they're perfected souls. So they know how to speak and not speak, but they spoke harshly. And that harsh speech went to the heart and caused an irritation in the receiving end of that sound vibration. And so, conclusion. We should be very careful. I know some persons that are very careful and they're very cultured and they know how to say in such a way it doesn't disturb the heart and the mind. At the same time, being effective. Now, someone who's not so cultured may not get it, like when their message is being spoken by a cultured person, it may be too gentle or too subtle or too something that they don't get it, but at least it's not agitating the mind like this is. So the harsh speech went to the heart, and then came the fratricidal war. They started doing things in response to or in reaction to the harsh speech. And that's, you know, uncultured people speak harshly, and uncultured people react to harsh speech. It's like one of the pieces of advice given by Narada to Dhruva, you know, to not be reactive to the harsh speech of his stepmother. But he was reactive, and he wasn't able, culture-wise, he wasn't able as a young boy and a Kshatriya-spirited young boy to do anything other than react. So that energy, that reacting energy, was directed towards Vishnu. As his mother indicated, also Narada indicated. So that's an ultimate backstop for us, if there is such a thing, that the super soul, Krishna, or Vishnu, or the personality of Godhead will help us get on the other side of a reactive mode. We shouldn't speak harshly, we shouldn't be reactive, both. Become Vaishnava. And Vaishnava principle is Krishna should be pleased. So both the harsh speech and reacting are not pleasing to Krishna. But the cure is cultivate a lifestyle that goes in the direction of pleasing Krishna. And exactly what Prabhupada was saying to this professor this morning, all good qualities will come. Become a devotee, become a want to please Krishna devotee, and all good qualities come. And then comes this automatically. Prabhupada used the word automatically in his discussion with his professor, but automatically doesn't mean mechanically, it means in a natural sequence. This Vaishnava has subsets. A devotee of the Lord has characteristics. Now supposing supposing here's a Vaishnava and he doesn't have these characteristics, then he's not a Vaishnava. That was Prabhupada's words. Means he's not matured yet, we can say. He's not matured yet. So it's the characteristic of a one who has become elevated that, for example, in this case, their speech is like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita chapter 17, verse 15, and it's not this. And that's his comment at the end of this purport. They were of that quality. They wouldn't speak harshly, but they spoke harshly, inspired by super soul to speak harshly. And then the reaction was also not becoming of elevated souls, but they reacted, you know, harshly, encounter harshly, and then take physical action and smash each other. Krishna's plan. Let's see if there's some discussion amongst our learned devotees here. I saw Pran Krishna's hand go up first.
This is a beautiful topic you picked and you explained very nicely, but I want to hear a little more.
Oh.
Like on 11th chapter, 33 famous verse, that 11th chapter, verse number 33, Krishna says, Jitta Shatru, you conquer your enemy. So that's an enemy is an emotional mentality, no? It's a feeling that this person is my enemy. But then end of the chapter, a few sloka later, he says, Nirvair Sarva Bhuteshu, Nirvair, without enmity. And Prabhupada writes, this is the essence of entire Bhagavad Gita, that sloka. So without enmity, how do you identify enemy? I'm trying to ponder, but I could not.
Well, you're a learned fellow. You probably can answer your own question. But you're just putting me in the hot seat and giving me a chance to speak. So
I like
one,
your view. That's
okay. The enmity is absent in the heart of one who is a Kshatriya, because one who is a Kshatriya doesn't fight arising from enmity, they arise from duty. And so the enemy is one who is a violation of Dharma. For a Kshatriya, that's the enemy and needs to be dealt with appropriately. So that's the category of enemy, but not with enmity or hatred. Akuranath, behind you.
Thank you. So Maharaj, we know Srila Prabhupada said automatically the good qualities of the demigods will appear in the devotee.
Yeah.
But devotees learn things. I mean, we learn to play musical instruments, we learn to read and do math, and you know, we learn our skills and crafts that we have to apply in our service. Don't we also have to teach devotees, you know, how to be good people and how to treat other people properly and not lie and cheat and steal or disrespect or insult people, like we're talking today about austerity of the speech. I mean, isn't there some, instead of just waiting for it automatically, shouldn't there also be some instruction to, as a craft, to in ethics, in being a good person and not doing bad things?
Do I have your WhatsApp number? I'd like to send to you this essay that Bhurijan Prabhu wrote on this topic, which is brilliant.
I'll give it to you after class.
Okay, after class, good. Wait, no, I'm not done yet. Keep the microphone, because we'll probably have some back and forth knowing you. So, this discussion I made reference to, that I heard just this morning, Prabhupada speaking in a conversation, 1973, Los Angeles, with a professor. The automatically word was used. Now, automatically doesn't mean mechanically automatically. It doesn't mean, so the topic was vegetarianism, but one becomes vegetarian because they're unwilling to cut the throat of an animal. Now, most people don't cut the throat of the animal. Someone else does it. They go buy the product, the people that do that, including thou shalt not kill people. You know, it's abundant. Thou shalt not kill people are engaged in the product. So therefore, they're not devotees of Jesus, or they're not devotees of the person who says. So I want to focus on your question. Is there something that should be done? The answer is yes. Here's the impetus for the something that should be done, including not cutting the throat of an animal or anything else that you are giving the examples of. I want to become proficient in kirtan. That was an example. Now, it can be the material side or it can be the devotional side. The devotional side is making an offering to Krishna that's pleasing to him. And that's a whole other consciousness. Whole other consciousness than just becoming musically adept and having enjoyment by music, because it's abundant in the world, it's all over the world. In all cultures of the world, different vocal and instrumental combined music of this and that, modes of nature, and you know, traditional ones that are not so dark, they're very light, but it's not devotional. So should we cultivate? Yes. For what purpose? That's the key. And it's connected entirely with the sarvadharmam parityajamamikam sharanam braja. That's the one thing that we do, and from that one thing, the other things come. Now, because the other thing comes, shouldn't we train and encourage and etc., help people, you know, be truthful and don't steal and, you know, follow the law, you know, be a good citizen and be a good human being, and like this discussion that's going to happen tomorrow, I guess, about relationships. Is it automatically, or is it something that requires training? So the point of the needle, and then there's the shaft of the needle. And the shaft of the needle follows the point of the needle. We don't ignore the shaft of the needle, but we give primary attention to the point, because that's where everything else follows behind that one thing. So this training and encouragement and don't do this, do that, do it and do it this way, like refined speech or anything else or anything else. And slowly, slowly, it's the refinement. And the essence, that's just like the question, discussion yesterday about additions to details of deity worship, like use of mudras and etc., 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 and procedures of mantras, etc., etc. The essence is the essence. If they're there or not there, the essence is the essence. And if it's going to be those additional things, please be sure that the essence is there, including refinement of musical skills or cooking or deity worship or anything that's devotional. There's the tantra, there's the procedure of how to do things, and then there's the spirit.
Jai.
Okay. So we do those things, but the point of the needle first. Okay, I'm ready for the next question.
It's more of a comment, Maharaj.
Okay.
If you don't mind. So I was thinking in this verse, when one takes intoxicant, then harsh speech comes about.
How which comes about?
Harsh speech.
Oh.
And repressed feelings also. So what happened in this instant was Satyaki brought up some feelings from since the Mahabharata 36 years back. And he approached Kritavarma and he says, well, why did you kill the sleeping sons of Draupadi? And so some of the crowd took the side of Satyaki and some took Kritavarma's side. And then Kritavarma said, well, why did you kill Burishrava? And so from that, the hard speak and the repressed speak, everything came about and there was a big
conflagration.
Yeah, that's how this, because there's not any verse in the Bhagavatam that actually explained the pastime, but this is from the Mahabharata.
Yes.
There's a detailed explanation.
Yeah.
So I just add something to that.
Yeah. Harsh speech, it depends on, let me ask you a question. Has anyone ever, in the course of your life, spoken harshly to you? Ever?
Never happened. Many times.
Okay.
But another thing, Maharaj.
Okay, but then let me just follow because you opened a door, so I'm walking in. There are different ways to respond. And sometimes. Depending. So if you have controlled speech, you can sometimes not react exactly, but respond strongly. Depends on the circumstance and et cetera, et cetera. So harsh speech goes on because of the modes of nature and pride and other, dark situations. And then there's ways to respond. We can respond with light, but also speak strongly, or be silent, or tolerate, just smile. That's very disarming. Depends on the circumstance. Okay, something further? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the class. I have a question about this topic of controlled speech.
Of what?
Controlled speech.
Controlled speech, okay.
It's something that's been bothering me for a while. And
your own or someone else's?
Someone else's.
Okay.
It has two parts. So for the first part, sometimes I've received criticism or harsh feedback for something that I've done, and sometimes I react to it like aggressively or defensively. Other times I kind of just try to listen to it and think of it as Krishna's trying to tell me something to work on or something I need to fix in myself. So like Krishna is using them as a medium for me to understand that. So the first question is that like a good mindset to have in those types of situations?
My answer to a question like this is, you know the answer, right? It depends. So there's variables in what you said. So without knowing the variables, it depends. And certainly having an array, you know, two or more possible responses to some situation of harsh speech coming your way, it's good to have a little brainstorm list, little menu of opportunities to select from. And then that requires patience, and it requires a mode of goodness reflection kind of condition to be able to brainstorm instead of just react. And then to select the best choice out of the brainstorm. That's another qualification that mode of goodness can give one, and Krishna, super soul, can give one. So your question was, are these appropriate responses? And my answer is, it depends on the circumstance and the relationship. And, you know, so the driving force behind the selection from the menu is Krishna should be pleased. Just stay focused on that. And even if you don't get it right this time then or the next time, you'll get it right because Krishna will help you get it right. Just so stay with that principle. That's the bhakti principle. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam. Then you can start in your life to make wise choices. And your brainstorm list may expand and be even have sub-branches of each one of those. Then you can be a, you know, cultured young lady. And not a reactive young lady.
Thank you,
Mary. Okay. You have another part too.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think if it, yeah, it's kind of connected to this. I also know that like everyone is given free will by Krishna, so sometimes, yeah, like I said, the harsh speech could be Krishna trying to tell me something, or it could be like their free will, like, or they're just saying what they're saying. So sometimes I get conflicted, like, is this something Krishna's trying to tell me? Is that how I should take it, or is
that, it depends. It depends. It may not be. So, you know, you don't get stuck. And if you don't have the answer to that question, don't get stuck. You can continue to be in reflective space in the course of time. Maybe some indication, maybe not, but maybe some indication will come from Krishna. This is what I intended, or there would just be silence. So just be patient and continue to be in the mode of goodness. Something else from the ladies' side? Okay, over here. Men's side? In the front.
Hi, Krishna Guru Maharaj. On the question of free will, how much free will, 1861 talks about Krishna says he, I direct the wanderings of all living entities. And then 1863 says, I'm giving you now still more confidence and knowledge. You deliberate on it fully and decide what you want to do.
Just take slowly. I got the first part, just last part.
1863 says,
Yeah.
I now give you still more confidential knowledge.
Okay.
You deliberate on it fully and decide what you want to do.
Okay.
Now, my understanding is that we have free will to desire and endeavor. So is there more, do we have free will to do anything else? That's one question. The other one.
I didn't get the first question. Just the question, not the preamble.
My understanding is that we have free will to desire and to endeavor.
But how are they disconnected? Is endeavor disconnected from desire, or is endeavor connected to desire?
It's not connected. Actually.
It's what?
It can be connected because...
Well, how can be not connected?
Thinking, feeling, and willing.
What?
I'm thinking about thinking, feeling, and willing.
But supposing you get to the stage of endeavoring, my question in response to your question is there not a desire behind the endeavor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they're connected.
So is there anything else that we have free will to do? Well, apart from desire?
You look to Krishna. That's something else we have to do. Supposing somebody doesn't do that, they still have free will. Supposing you connect your free will to what Krishna wants, that's another choice. It's another free will choice.
The other thing, I seem to be somewhat confused. Is there any contradiction with this 861 that says the free will?
He's directing the wandering of all living entities.
With the contradiction.
But that's super soul. Supposing I'm in La La Land and I want La La Land, and Krishna's directing the wandering. You want? Okay. Wander all you like in La La Land. He's directing. We can't take a step in La La Land without Krishna's directing us. And then we may have another kind. I want what you want. He'll direct the wanderings of that person also. I see some restlessness in the audience. It's 9 o'clock. The 9 o'clock bell is ringing. I want to end at 9 o'clock. If you have some other question, you can come up and we'll have a little chat, but I'd like to honor the schedule. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.